something interesting to me. You said to me that you're saying some things that you either haven't said in a very long time or never said to somebody else.
Both.
So can you give me an example of one of those?
The so-called imagination for Waldorf teachers that Waldorf schools don't seem to know about. Unless they're part of a very intimate circle. Because it's, those esoteric things are not normally spoken about. And it's a trust that I have in you that knows to respect other people's spiritual entity and integrity. Because the time now is ripe for more recognition of some of the things behind anthroposophy and world of education and so on. And I'm a little bit alone in the liberties that I take to behave in ways a little different than other anthroposophists. I suppose I could say that. I felt it was time that the anthroposophists concerned themselves with money. At a certain time when I was walking down in a certain area in Sussex, and that's where I started the conversations on money. Anthroposophists were all beginning to concern themselves with it.
So you thought that they should?
Yes. I felt, and I then selected the people I invited to come together to talk about it. It was extraordinary because at that time I was then told, we're actually just starting now. That came from Holland. And they took over from my Mercury Providence Society the loan aspect, whereas the pension fund was left in the Mercury Providence Society. And then when Emerson nearly went bankrupt, I had to step in to save the Mercury Providence Society to not be pulled down by that disaster, and I had to buy a nice big field with great oak trees in it so that that could be added to the Tablehurst farm and taken off Emerson. So Tablehurst farm had to take on the responsibility for that field in its farming operation. And I could justify that, because that's the foundation.
I keep hearing more and more stories about where you have stepped up to help with your money constantly to keep things going. And was this money that you basically got from inheritance from your father's work? Father-in-law. Was that the oil?
No, that was my grandfather.
That's your grandfather.
Father-in-law was the leader of the three brothers that started a company called Voit, V-O-I-T-H.
Ah.
Started in Heidenheim, Germany. Now it's international.
And what did that company do?
Make machinery for making paper. Turbines generating electricity. My father-in-law worked on the Niagara Dam.
Oh, wow.
Propellers filing as a young man.
Tell me about your association with Michael Fields. Were you the institute? Were you the one that founded it? Were you
together with my wife and Ruth Sinica.
And it started out as a Education?
Education research for biodynamics.
So how is it now that it's evolved quite far away from biodynamics and is just concentrating on organic? How did that happen?
Because there weren't enough people to of the caliber we needed.
To teach it?
To teach it. And it was more important at that time to strengthen the village situation in organic agriculture and for the various farms. And with nobody... Well, actually, what happened was that we lost our biodynamic scientist. He wouldn't communicate anymore about what he was doing with one of the board members. Well, actually, the whole board, or with me. So we couldn't have that, unfortunately, because that doesn't belong in the present research days. You have to be in tune with your board. And he wasn't.
So
he left.
The major contributions that I've learned about are the opening of the Waldorf School, the opening of the Michael Fields Institute, and also the major promotion of biodynamics, also through the acquisition of land, which you, through leases and through other arrangements, you turned into biodynamic farming, agriculture, husbandry.
As far as I could, yes.
And today, some of those farms are still operating.
Yes.
What are some other things that you
did? The Fields neighborhood.
Is it a cooperative or?
No, it's housing community.
Oh, housing community. It's an association.
Yeah,
of homeowners,
yeah,
who also share a common area.
That's right.
And they pay dues for the support of those common areas.
Yeah.
And part of the common area was a farm.
Well, it's surrounded by farmland.
And how many houses were in that community?
Well, we've only built the first 10.
And it still exists today?
Yeah.
And all the houses occupied?
Yeah, they're all occupied.
And
so all sold.
How is this community different? What was your vision for the community?
To be able to share common space together. And be a cultural audience for plays, orchestras, whatever, in the Michael Fields conference room.
And were you hoping that there was a certain philosophy that bound the people that...
Well, you'd have to be satisfied to have good neighbors. And one Dutch lady bought in immediately. She recognized the community aspect.
Was there anything else that you can think of?
The fact that architecture has such a strong social influence made me do this. And the other thing is that one of my ladies who helped start the Waldorf School is back in Oklahoma now, had also started a daycare. And then she left, and it was going to collapse. So I said, that's not necessary, all the staff is there. We just changed the name and continue. So we changed the name from Lifeways to the Climbing Tree. And that has gained a tremendous reputation in the village of East Troy, which has been a help in the long run. And that now they are checking out whether they can buy it from me.
So often we see, especially at the early stages of growth of an organization, a business, or anything else, how critical a single person could be to success or failure.
Yeah.
And so you've mentioned two or three different things when somebody left and it actually created a big setback.
Right.
So I guess once you get to a critical size and also a critical consensus of enough people, it's not as dependent on one person.
Right.
But oftentimes...
I had to bridge that gap.
Right. And oftentimes when you're on the vanguard, in the vanguard there, creating new modalities, new paradigms, it's that one person that can make it or break it. And I think that the forces, the darker forces, understand that.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes they target these people at certain stages.
Yeah, because they're afraid of what might develop.
So here's Rudolf Steiner, who 1 year after doing his first agricultural lectures, dies, is poisoned. You know, did that agricultural new paradigm, did that present such a threat to the control mechanism that they felt he had to be eliminated? Was that, do you feel that that was one of the major things they were concerned about? Or was it other things?
It certainly is a occult threat, not only a physical threat to secret societies and that sort of thing. Because he knew they existed.
One of the things that Catherine Fitz points out to, that the data collection control mechanism goes right down to the community level, to neighborhoods. So they're able to understand at a neighborhood level, and now with technology down to an individual level, about who is a potential threat. So in a world, a brave new world like that, a brave new Orwellian world like that, what advice can you give the change agents and how they need to operate?
Well, it's no use swaggering about your successes because you don't really want too much to get out all at once so that you're recognized as a change agent that some don't want.
So stay under the radar as much as possible.
That's the concern. Be flexible.
Be what?
Flexible.
Flexible. And have your antenna up.
Yeah.
As you look back on your life, or maybe phrase it another way. Let's say you were 40 or 50 years old today.
Half the age.
What would you be trying to do? How would you be directing your energy and your resources?
What would I do differently, in other words?
Well, it's actually a different question, and I want to know that, but I want to know if today you were 40 years old, 50 years old.
Oh my goodness.
How would you be focusing your energy and resources today?
Well, I would certainly acquaint myself with the technology of the day as best I possibly could and see who has other values besides technology. And I guess I would be trying to assess what their gifts were, ask if they want to, like I did with her, ask if they want to join my efforts, and then teach them more about anthroposophy at an earlier stage, so that they can deal with disloyalty when it comes, because they know there are other values which they hold also. They're more conscious of these more permanently spiritual values, to encourage them to
have the courage to stay in the fight.
Yeah, absolutely. And have the mental flexibility to understand more and not be fanatics of this or that spiritual discovery.
We talked about, at times, people have referred to your efforts and Steiner's efforts and people associated with that as kind of a cult. And I said, well, cults don't accept the possibility of refutation. And you do. You're very open to somebody coming and showing you, oh no, this doesn't work, or this is wrong, or this is a better way, or something like that. Correct?
Well, yes, but I know enough about Steiner's biography to know the difficulties he encountered, to some of the struggles that he had, and then to this mission. Now, this is based on my understanding and continuing conviction about reincarnation, because I was born with that. That wasn't just my parents. So then to recognize people that belong to a certain association of a group, you can see how they belong and see that there's something being worked out. So karma is a law of nature that is worth studying, how things work.
But you very much view our time on Earth as a learning experience, and we come back to learn the lessons we need to learn.
Right.
Do you also believe that we make choices regarding that, in terms of even who our parents should be or the types of things we want to be doing? Some people believe that too.
Yes, after a certain stage of development, I would say yes.
And do you believe also that we come with kind of the memory of that choice wiped out so that we can live life anew?
Yes.
You know, I've heard this enough from a number of people that are not crackpots to say there must be something to it. And I don't think it's just because everybody's, you know, reading the same story.
No.
And because you said something quite remarkable. You said even at an early age you had a sense that reincarnation was something real.
Yeah, absolutely.
At like what age? 3, 4, 5?
Yeah, 3 or 4.
So it just made sense to you, or it just was a, I mean, just
a... I had a schoolmate who only survived the first 8 years until sickness took her away from the earth.
You're a schoolmate?
Yeah. And she needed to be told that there is such a thing as reincarnation, I thought. And my teacher and godfather, Jess Darrell, saw me explain to her
that this wasn't the end.
Or the beginning.
And did that please him or did that upset him?
By the way he described it to me, I think it must have pleased him. Because So I said to her, just like you are inside your coat. I grabbed her coat. You're inside this coat.
Oh, you take the coat off. Yeah. That may go away, but you're still there.
Yeah.
So you didn't tell her that just to make her feel better. You told her
that. No, I told her that that was the spirit, that she was inside her coat. And it's just like the trams in Basel are made of wood. That's more spiritual than the trams in Streatham, London, that are made of metal. Because wood grows in nature, and metal has to be made from ore.
But when you told her about this reincarnation, it wasn't just to make her feel good, it was something that you firmly believed and wanted to share with her.
Yeah, I felt she needed to know. So as a teacher at a very young age.
The teacher what?
A teacher at a very young age.
Yes. Did you ever have a sense that you were associated with a culture that was off-planet?
Not at that age.
But later?
Yeah. As long as I was a child, people were very, very friendly. They didn't feel threatened.
By you?
Right. That didn't come until, are you Swiss? And when I was asked that question, I said no.
They were asking you, are you Swiss? And when you said no, yeah, I'm English, that's it. That it, they weren't as friendly anymore. Yes, there's lots of ways to polarize. That's for sure, to divide. And not keep us connected with the important things in life. So, I want to ask this one more time because this is actually significant and it's also significant to me. So you felt kind of a connection with a culture that was, that you could describe as somewhere else off planet.
I suppose. I never thought that. I always thought I was here on Earth making connections in some cases to totally new people. How do you recognize karma? You can read Steiner's lecture on that. Yeah, I know that I had a lot to learn. I felt I had a lot to learn.
Do you think you've learned what you needed to learn this time around?
No. I should have spent a little more time with some of Steiner's suggested exercises. Then the karmic question might have been answered on more occasions than it has.
These exercises, were these the movement exercises in particular?
No, they're more thought exercises.
So, thought experiments in a way? Or meditation type?
Meditation. Looking back over the day, what have I experienced? What have I improved my memory? I don't know how it would have affected the Parkinson, but
so let me ask the other corollary to the first question. Looking back now, what would you have done differently in your life, if anything?
Well, as I say, I would have concerned myself at an earlier stage with being a more industrious pupil.
Industrious pupil. I just walked in, you know, in your living room here. You have the complete set of lectures in German and most of them in English of Rudolf Steiner, and you have multiple sets. So it seems like you've been quite a good student.
Right, but I'm a very slow reader. And I didn't learn to read until I was 13.
Really?
I was able to read a little bit at 12 because I was sick and confined to bed. But then when I got up, I forgot how to read again. I had to learn it at age 13.
But you were in school before then?
Oh, yes.
But you just were, you had a, you weren't capable of learning how to read, or you didn't have enough time because of sickness, or what?
Interest and sickness.
Interest?
I wasn't sufficiently interested in reading.
What interested you more? Living?
Nature. Looking at nature. Talking. Learning what other people thought.
Do you think that reading is perhaps not the optimal way to learn?
Well, it's certainly a wonderful and important way, but at an age that's too young, in my case anyway, it would confine the structure of my thinking capacity.
So is the limitation in the fact that it's in language itself, in the written word?
Yes.
And so to a certain extent that restricts us
from
going places we would otherwise go.
Yeah. See, my father, being a Waldorf teacher, also read what Stanley told to the teachers about reading. That's quite interesting.
Oh, what was that?
Well, how it, if reading were not taught at such an early age as it is, we would have many more initiates around.
Wow. That's deep. So don't constrict the mind of the young person. Let it flow the way that it needs to. Let him imagine. Let him explore the spoken word, let him explore relationships with other people and with nature. And so to a certain extent, reading at too early an age is a loss of freedom.
I would say so. I luckily had a father who knew that, was not bothered by the fact that people would say, well, your son is not learning to read very well.
Yeah, today the state would come and take him away and stick him in an institution.
Yeah.
Because you were not a good father, not a good parent.
Yeah.
I think I have some ideas on this, but I would love to get your reflections. It seems almost any time you look at a movement of some kind, political, philosophical, and so on, that after the founder leaves, there is a perversion, you might say, oftentimes.
Yes.
And division, and infighting, and power struggles that truly debilitate things. And whether it's Christianity or Rudolf Steiner's work or, you know, the French Revolution, it doesn't matter. Why do you think that happens?
Thinking, feeling, and willing, if you look at those three faculties, thinking clearly, emotions clouding your thinking, and passion, and it comes from the will, drive, interfere, because they're too closely connected to each other and people don't have the patience to think through something because they're passionate about this because it affects their emotions so strongly.
By the same token, our emotions can provide a lot of clarity, can't they, at times?
If you will wait for that clarity to emerge, yes. But to start with, you're in a rage. And you take sides. I'm not prepared to watch what you really should be doing. That's where it's important for the individual to make their own decision. Not necessarily go with one side or the other, but wait to see which it needs support. And then you'll find this needs support on this side, and that needs support on that side, so we need both. I think I told you already that a couple of people important in the Anthroposophical movement were staying with us in England because they'd come to give a lecture, and they would confess to me that they voted for the wrong side.
Yes. A number of years later.
Yeah. House was had a unique and different design, so they knew they were in an Anthroposophical environment. So I guess they trusted me to tell me that secret.
Do you think there's something to feng shui? Because that is basically application of energetics to architecture, you might say.
Oh, yes.
But in terms of the Oriental way of doing it.
Right.
So they'll build skyscrapers that have, you know, holes near the top for the spirits so that they can go through the fly through the buildings and not be obstructed or something.
Right. I'm sure they affect us. But now the question comes, what of Father, Son, and Holy Ghost? How do they relate to this? I think then one can see, is it separating humanity or is it uniting? So I would try and look at it from that perspective.
What is your feeling? Is it uniting or separating?
Well, it's certainly sharpening the opportunities of the elite. Whether it's supporting community or not is another question.
And how does it support the elite?
Because
it's hierarchical, or?
Yes, that's the one. And the other is, well, you can do this, let's do it somewhere else where it doesn't belong. For instance, some years ago I was driving past Dallas on the freeway, outside of Dallas, because I wasn't going in. And the freeway goes around in a big semicircle. And so when you look at Dallas from that point of view, point of view, literally, it's like a crystal turning in front of you. Well, crystals are good for thinking. Do they do anything for you?
So, you see many examples of where city planning, architecture is used as a control mechanism by people that understand
those
energetics. And do you think the fact that a group like the Masons is so tied in with construction, that that's more than just a coincidence?
Yes. Could be, but I think we as humanity have to embrace what those things are doing and learn from them and work through to a healing situation so that eventually we can come to an experience of the Holy Spirit.
So it's like getting through the 9 stages of hierarchy too, right?
Yes. Interesting thought. I have this building of ours, which is a new building, but it looks like an old barn, to have the agricultural gesture. The arcs of the roof on either side come together at the top, of which the last 2 feet are tangents to the curve of the roof. not just the curve continued, because that didn't give us enough peak. If the curve was just competing, it would look too much like a beehive. But if it were too pointed, it would be too much like a cathedral. I didn't want that either. So I wanted something in between. And the in-between gesture, of course, needed other things too. And that was at the west, the south end. I curved the wall so that when you perform, when you put together a circle for a discussion on the inside, the people at the middle of the straight line of the back wall don't feel pushed into the circle. But then people can feel more like equals if they're in a true circle. Little things like that. After the conference, one of the first big BD conferences, one of the participants said, Christopher must have some stuff to put in his buildings that helps social activity. So I realized she had noticed something and felt comfortable, and somebody else describes how they suddenly felt at home in the biodynamic movement, which was not of their country, but in America.
So are these principles that you knew of from working, from studying Steiner, that you applied, or was it just a sense of what you had about what would be right for the situation?
Both, because my father was very keen on Steiner's architecture. So we did a lot together, and he was sort of a pioneer on that side of things for the school.
And was your father a close associate of Steiner? Or knew of him and met him, studied with him?
No, but he did hear one lecture and fell asleep.
He fell asleep. And did his respect for Steiner start after that, or was it before that?
Well, his brother was translating for Steiner all the time. George Adams was his brother. I'm sure.
You know, sometimes when people fall asleep, it's not because they're bored, but because they're overwhelmed. What do you think it was for your father?
He was certainly not bored. He wouldn't have been bored, judging by all the lectures he read, which were available in shorthand before they were printed.
I remember being with somebody in the supermarket industry, and I was explaining to him, because he was in charge of innovation, all these ideas and all that. And basically, it blew his mind so much, it overloaded him, that he almost conked out.
Standing up?
He was sitting down. It's like, he got to the point where he almost looked like he had fallen asleep, because he had to shut off his brain, he couldn't take anymore.
Right. But you have a gift in words to really get to the core. So thank you for that.
So Steiner had advice to give us on agriculture, social intercourse, on movement, on sounds, on architecture, in terms of how to connect, you might say, with the more powerful energetics that are available to us.
And he was capable to change his theme when somebody came late to the lecture, because they were there.
So he would recognize them coming in, or he would sense more?
He would know who was coming at a later stage. How? We don't know. that was part of his clairvoyance.
So he would be able to sense what the audience needed?
Yes.
Real time?
Yes. I've been given examples of it, which I don't remember at this stage. I thought that's interesting. I've often thought about it. There's a whole lot of stuff that I would do for Steiner. I lived longer, I know that, but it's better I die first and come back. There's a lot that's waiting to be done.
Can you tell me about that? What are those things?
Well, the interesting thing is that came to me when I was coming to this change in my life with the Parkinson.
After your wife's death?
Yes. And these things have all gone now, because I'm so much involved with the transfer of ownership, land and so on. So while they were there, particularly strongly when I left teaching Waldorf education, we came here together. There were all kinds of things that I saw could be realized here in America, which might not necessarily get started in Europe because of the mentality and flexibility of the Americans versus the British. So there are different things I would do in different countries, depending on where I grew up. So we'll see.
So tell me a few.
I think there would be a question of different substances that could be produced, not just drugs, chemicals, but medicinally, which is of course there in the medical movement.
So basically treating agriculture instead of as a pharmacologist would, more as a herbalist would.
Right.
That's fascinating.
So I'm lucky to have this neighbor, Mark McKibben. So I can talk with him about that. And there's an urge now to create an anthroposophical hospital. So I would certainly contribute to that in whatever way I could, because that's the next threat to the human form and health, I would say.
Pharmacology in particular, or?
Well, then of course goes into food and all that. Only was it discovered by others that I was a foodie, not by myself. So.
Do you think that electromagnetic radiation is damaging to us? So cell towers and radio signals and
yes.
Wireless. And
there's a lot of health issues, I would say, need to be balanced.
Did Rudolf Steiner ever identify certain frequencies that would promote health versus others?
Not that I know of that he spoke about as frequencies.
But you have this lyre, you do have this musical instrument.
Yeah, but that's out of the imagination of what people have learned from. So I think it's not just Steiner, it's a lot of his pupils that have learned to develop new things. And that, of course, was his main aim, to help people become free so that they would do the inventing and so on.
Yep. Be free enough so you can become co-creators.
Exactly.
and then have a distributed network of them all around the world.
Yeah, and have the responsibility locally established by those individuals.
You, when we talked about why movements go awry, you said one of the main reasons is because we don't stop to take the time to think. And we get overwhelmed by emotions and passions and impulses.
Right.
But yet you said that those emotions can inform when you're in the right state of mind and you have sufficient clarity to understand them. So
definitely.
You have a sense that sometimes the best decisions are made when we have our brain, our heart, and our gut kind of integrated?
Sure, and in harmony with each other, yeah. And some clarity has arisen for the thought to become visible, so to speak.
And what you found is, if the right intentionality is there, the right environment, maybe perhaps the right facilitator and the right responsibility, the sense of responsibility, that a consensus almost evolves, emerges in almost a mysterious, unpredictable way.
Yeah, and then if you eat the light root, you saw that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be eating the right stuff.
Yeah.
That's one of the key messages.
Yeah.
So Catherine Fitz says, shut off your TV, bank local, and eat fresh, eat the right foods. That's a pretty good formula for the revolution, right?
Yeah.
We were talking about
after the founder.
Emotions overcome thought, but yet they can inform when you're ready for it. Do you believe in that mind control exists, that people are using mind control techniques to create confusion or get results that they want?
They go further than mind control. Mind control alone won't do it.
So it's almost spiritual control.
Well, it's the language. I mean, language is a wonderful communicating art, and if you can't explain something quickly enough or in time to somebody who needs to know, you can't prevent any quarrels. But if you know what you have to say because your intuition tells you how to help people understand each other, you're stuck.
Also, language can be used to entrap.
Oh, yes.
Because you can have certain meanings which actually destroy possibility as opposed to increasing possibility.
Right.
So if you call somebody, you're a conspirator, you're a conspiracy theory nut, well, right away, you know, that
You as the one who says it is immediately categorized by the listener.
There you go.
That's why I had to be a teacher first. This is the Ashtanga movement is now around 10 years after his death, when the split came. Well, still, when I was in my late 20s or early 30s, no, wait a minute, 40s. When I created this bank exploration group from the international in Europe, Mark Finzer's father came with his son to that meeting in Forest Row. And I had asked the local chairman of the Anthroposophical Society's board if he would join us. And he said, Christopher, I don't think I want to go into the ASNGP country. We which was the other side before the at the time of the split. Even though the societies had come together a year or two before.
To what extent do you think that this destructive process is actually part of a cycle of learning? It's almost like organizations have to go through that.
To learn general humanitarian principles, yes. But that it has to destroy an important spiritual insight for the world to work with, or just destroy its memento, is not so good.
To what extent do you feel that a lot of these, that positive momentum is actually derailed with intentionality versus just failure of individuals to be as...
Well, I was only 6 years old at the time, so I just know the consequences and suffered them. But...
As you look back, knowing what you know now, to what extent is a lot of human activity positive derailed intentionally? As opposed to just because we're not quite as smart or as compassionate or able to listen or reasonable as we need to be.
That's a good question, but I need to think about it until next time.
Because there are headwinds that we're up against that come from our own shortcomings.
Exactly.
You know, we don't have our act together, we're not thinking quite as clearly, we don't know what we need to know, we're not being as at good at listening as we need to be, we don't go in with the right intentionality. But there's also headwinds that come from mind control, from basically somebody with an intention to basically stop that positive momentum and direct it another way. And so I'd be interesting after 80-something years of life and dealing with what you've been dealing with, to get a sense of how much you think that derailment, that stopping of that positive momentum is caused by our own failings as individuals or some intentional intervention.
Yeah. As I say, I haven't studied long enough to be able to say how much. Is it every time? Is it?
But what's your sense? It's some of both?
Oh, yes. But in each specific case,
you'd have to look at it.
You'd probably find out where it actually comes from.
But in general, you think both
things
are working?
Yeah, everything's working.
Everything you can think of.
That's right, it's our job to sort it out.
Well, Chris, man, I can't tell you how wonderful this has been for me, and also... I guess it's been a while coming, but it's also something I'd like to come back and do sooner rather than later.
You're very, very welcome anytime. And my angel, Catherine Austin Fitz, who's gone through so much, please give her my love.
You bet.
And a big hug. Thank you. Thank you.